I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings.
Dude, that's pretty cool.
Man, that is a,
Dude, that's pretty good.
This is The Gloom, bringing you weekly interviews with F3 Omaha Packs, exploring their F3 experiences and finding those sticky elements that create the glue in the gloom.
Shout out to our sponsors. Major Team Mortgage, Omaha Laser Dentistry, Exclusively Eye Care, Liberty Core Real Estate, Avier Wealth Management, and Apex Men's Clinic. We appreciate their support.
What's it like to love your dentist? Well, you're about to find out, where healthy smiles go beyond your teeth. No drilling, no needles, and no anxiety. Relax, it's Omaha Laser Dentistry. Welcome to better. At Omaha Laser Dentistry, Dr. Bullenparty uses the Soleya laser, a CO2 laser that's used in all of his day-to-day patient care. He provides thorough exams, assessments, and treatments for things like snoring, tethered tissue, and extractions like wisdom teeth, as well as other surgeries. Check them out today at omahalaserdentistry.com. Discounts may be available for F3 Omaha members.
Now let's get back to the gloom.
And we're back. Man, I'm excited to get this guy's story out. I've heard some of it just in COTs and out in the gloom and just talking before this. I just love this guy's passion for life and for his family and for leadership. And so we got Busser on today, man. Busser, I'm excited to hear your kind of EH journey and the naming story, because I don't know how many guys know that that story. But why don't you take us back, start us at the beginning, kind of how it all got started in F3.
Oh yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, Plague and Pony. So the EH story and kind of how I found out about it. OGK is the person who I very first heard about this from. We moved into our neighborhood out here in Papillion, and our wives became friends. We've got boys. We've actually got three kids that are all very similar in age. And anyways, we became friends through that, but we were more or less acquaintances, but kind of got more on the friend level. And he had mentioned it a couple times, but never really EH'd very hard. And, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of let me know. And honestly, in my head, I was kind of like, I don't think I'd fit in with this group. It sounds like people that are higher class, higher quality than me. You know, I wouldn't fit in with this group. And then fast forward, my EH, the true EH probably goes to my wife. So I actually quit drinking and became sober in September of 22. And my wife was kind of the one who was pushing me, like, hey, you need to find something to occupy your time, right? Because just to be completely open and honest, my addiction to alcohol kind of led my life and the decisions that I made, even, you know, midweek for what was going to happen later in the week, right? So mm-hmm. it's really a driving force. And so quitting drinking was, so, you know, I needed to fill that gap, which may sound kind of odd, but so she was pushing me towards it, and Animal House also lives in our neighborhood, and my wife had talked to his wife, and so she had kind of had this brought back up, and she was kind of pushing me. She's like, you should go try it, and we ended up having a neighborhood picnic, and OGK and Animal House were there, and I was like, you know what, I was feeling kind of open to the idea, so I just kind of went up and sort of introduced myself to Animal House and had him give me kind of a final pitch. And then the next morning I went to Titan Alley. So
Nice. Well, so what did you think of the first workout, and how did we land on Busser as a name?
So the first workout, you know, I was probably overconfident going into it. Like, I wasn't in very good shape, just to be honest, but, you know, I probably thought I was in better shape. I thought in my head, you know, I run 4 miles, you know, a few times a month, you know, like running's not going to be any problem. And literally running down the hill at Titan Alley, I was like, how, I can't keep up with these guys going downhill less than a quarter of a mile into this beatdown. So it was very humbling. Obviously a MRF for the first beatdown. It's kind of a tough one. How we landed on Busser, so bussing tables was my first job. That's how we ended up back to it. You know, kind of the standard questions came out. What do you like to do? I remember, you know, mentioning kids, married, I'd like to go camping, spend time outside. And then for whatever reason, it just ended up back to my first job. So
where was that at? Where'd you bust tables at?
It was summer. The first one I went to, the first place I ever worked was Summer Kitchen Cafe. There used to be one on 129th and Maple there, right off the 9-hole par 3 golf course for Eagle Run, I think.
Oh yeah.
So you grew up around here, I guess, huh?
Yeah, born and raised in Omaha, so kind of lived all over.
Okay. So when you joined, did you happen to know some of the guys that were in there or run into them over time?
You know, not really. Especially, so I'm newer to the. Not newer anymore, but we moved to Papillion about 6 years ago. And before that we had lived in the Benson area.
Okay.
So, you know, posting in Sarpy, I honestly probably didn't surround myself with a whole lot of guys who were interested in waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go work out. So, I didn't really know, there aren't a whole lot of people. There's probably more so that have kind of came into F3 since then. It's like, oh, hey man, we worked together like 15 years ago at the First National or whatever, you know? So there's been some random, people that I've met that have joined, but I didn't necessarily know anybody when I came in.
Cool. So what did you think of that first workout? Right. I mean, it took some coaching from your wife, some EHing from Animal House and EKG, but you get there. What are your thoughts?
So it was, at first it was pretty awkward. So I pulled up and I was a little early, right? Cause I didn't want to be late. And I didn't know at the time that it was Stormbreaker and Titan Alley. And they both started at 5:30. I get out of my car and Mulch and Crankbait are standing there. And I'm like, oh, hey, cool. What's up? They introduced themselves. I let them know I'm new. But then we kind of left it at that. And I saw guys across the street, you know, doing what, you know, now I know is Mary. And so I was like, oh, I'm late. They're already started. So I went over there and like, but they didn't like welcome me in, right? They just kept doing Mary and going around and counting the hammers. And I actually sat down like back away from the circle. And so, but you know, I was just totally open to it because, you know, I was kind of lost after, just, you know, becoming sober and like this new group. I was just like, my life has to change. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, whatever, this is it. Like this, I can get through this awkward period right now of sitting outside of these guys. So, yeah, they ball Amanda'd up and everything. And I was just kind of standing there like, oh, okay, whatever. And then I find out that was the Smurf group. And then there was,
that's funny.
Follow, so.
You know,
it was really a humbling beat down and, a little bit nerve wracking to go up, you know, cause Animal House was the only one who was going to be there at that beat down that I knew. And I knew Animal House all of like, oh, I've seen him running his dog around the neighborhood. And I talked to him for 5 minutes at this, you know, neighborhood party yesterday.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm excited that you shared your story. I'm curious, you know, a little bit of like your backstory. So you grew up in Omaha, would love to kind of hear like, you know, where you went to high school. And then we like to get like, what was your relationship sort of with fitness or, you know, did you play sports, that sort of thing. But I think I would also love to hear, I don't know that you'll have an answer for this, but how did you get down that path where it became like alcohol was a driving force and became a problem? Just curious if you have any insight you can share with us there.
Yeah. So they probably actually tie together more than you might think. Or, you know, one kind of diverted the other one or shut the other one down. So yeah, I grew up in Omaha, parents were always divorced, you know, since I was a young kid. So I kind of, I didn't have a bad childhood, but I, you know, I spent some times that I lived with, you know, grandparents and one of my parents or, you know, the other grandparent, you know, sometimes then one of my parents would rent a house somewhere, you know, or buy a house and I'd live there periodically. But I kind of was all over the place. So I went to school anywhere from in the Benson area. And then I went to high school at Burke. And so we graduated from Burke in 04. I was always really into sports as a kid. Like I loved it. I loved to play soccer, loved to play basketball. Yeah, those were kind of my two go-tos that I kind of feel like I kind of excelled at. Went to Burke and decided, along with some friends, that we were going to go out for freshman football. And so I played freshman football. And, you know, that was much more demanding than any other, you know, sports team I've been a part of, where you practice maybe one time a week and have a game on Saturdays, right? But I enjoyed it, but I also realized that I wasn't in nearly as good shape and, you know, I'd have to work really hard to, you know, really be able to have any playing time. Had some highlights that I still remember fondly. It's kind of fun to go to Gross and work out at Catamount because I remember I had kind of, that was like my shining star achievement of athletic ability. I returned an onside kick down to like the 5 yard line.
Nice.
Remember the coach telling me that he was timing me on the sundial when I got back to the. I wasn't fast then. I'm not fast now. I remember running with the ball, and while that is one of my, you know, sports highlights of my life, I remember almost fumbling it like 3 times because I had never actually carried the ball in practice. So after freshman football, I had already kind of, even in eighth grade and seventh grade, started to be around crowds who would, you know, find ways to get cigarettes or Black and Milds or, you know, beer. It wasn't beer originally. It would be, you know, hard liquor that somebody could swipe out of a parent's cabinet or something, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was something that I had been exposed to at a pretty young age, right? Like 12, 13 years old. And it wasn't something that I really shied away from. Like I probably wanted to fit in, you know, wanted to kind of be cool and wanted to be a part of the group that I thought was kind of like the popular crew. And so that's kind of how I got into that. And then basically after freshman football in ninth grade, I just kind of went down. I just basically quit sports. Like I was going to try out for basketball and then I decided, no, I think honestly, it was probably like I partied with some friends and I was supposed to, you know, try out the next week. And I was just like, I'm just not going to do it because I don't feel good. Right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where sports and my athletic career stopped. And basically I switched over to, hey, I'm going to, you know, smoke cigarettes because it's cool and rebellious. And then I'm going to, you know, smoke pot and I'm going to drink on the weekends. And even had times as a freshman, second half, you know, year of my freshman year of high school, even dabbled in some harder stuff. It went pretty extreme, pretty quick for me. And then it kind of was just something that stuck around, but it didn't necessarily consume my life. But it was always something that was there. And while it didn't consume my life, maybe from an outside perspective, it started to more and more consume my life from an internal perspective. Looking back on it now, it's really apparent how much a lot of my decisions that I made for a good majority of my adolescent and adult life revolved around substances and being able to take them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then alcohol, it's just, it's readily available, especially once you turn 21.
Yeah.
You know, you can just go to the gas station anytime you want and go to the store. Yeah, it's just something that kind of got out of control for me. And, I've got an addictive personality, so
yeah.
It's just something that
I'm surprised. I bet we partied together at some point in high school. I'm thinking back. I graduated from Westside in 04. You know, Burke was always where the kids that got kicked out of Westside would go to Burke, right? It was always, but very similar kind of story, right? And I know for me, you just using in high school taught you how to hide it well, right? Because you could be drunk or high at school. Figured out how to not get in trouble and sort of, you know, I remember having buddies that took tests on acid, you know, and they got A's on them, you know? And so you just sort of become a specialist in how to hide and sort of let that become part of you. I'm curious for you, what was sort of that moment where you realized like, I gotta make a change, like prior to getting into F3, like what do you remember that rock bottom sort of moment, or are you willing to share, I guess, if you would love to hear that.
Yeah. Well, there were multiple rock bottoms, right? It's just a matter of which one ends up being the real bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But I credit my wife for sticking with me and pulling me out of it. Right. There had been multiple times where there were hard conversations about, hey, something needs to change or, you know, our life together is going to change, which is scary in the moment. But then once things calm down and, you know, you behave for 3 or 4 weeks in a row and things get lax again, and then you start, you know, you pick back up. That was kind of my rhythm. Right. And, you know, and it wasn't necessarily like a roller coaster where it was like once a month we were having a big fight, but it was, you know, like once every 6 months or a year, I'd get really out of control and it would kind of build to that. My rock bottom that I finally hit, it's embarrassing, but I'm willing to share it. But my wife was out of town on a girls trip and I was at home with my three kids. They probably were 6, 6, 3, and 2 at the time. So young, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Saturday and I spent most of the day drinking, you know, not to oblivion, but just, you know, start having a beer at open a beer at noon. And mm-hmm. then, you know, for anybody who has problems with binge drinking, if you start at noon, you're probably not going to stop until about midnight. And that leaves a lot of time. And so I remember sitting in my garage, drinking just whatever was left in the house. I think I had drank all the beer that was left and I was drinking seltzers, and, you know, now they're selling whatever Delta 8, Delta 9,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff. So I'm dabbling in that too. And then I remember just you know, to the point where I got to like, I was like blackout and I was like crawling up the stairs, and I woke up the next morning and my wife called, and like when I answered the phone, she knew like, well, what's wrong with you? You know, she's calling like 8 o'clock in the morning and I'm still in bed. And so it just like, and I honestly broke down and I was like, I got a problem and I need to stop. Right. Like, cause I kind of like in that moment realized getting to the point of blackout with my three little kids at home, like that could have been serious. Like, I mean, could be serious consequences to that. Right. And that was honestly the time that I finally realized like, that's it. And, that was, September 10th. And then September 11th is the morning that I decided to get sober, and I've been sober since. So
yeah,
that's incredible.
I, you know, to me, what I'm reminded of is just when a guy shows up right? Because all of this is pre F3, right? So yeah. Like when a new guy shows up in the morning and we get the chance to meet him, like we never know what they're coming to that group. Like what's the pre story, right? Like what's the driving factor? And so I think it's just important for us to remember that like everybody's got, you know, something, right? Whether it's this or whether maybe just extreme loneliness or depression or whatever, you know, it's just taking time to, you know, welcome the guy, get to know him, and just create space for a guy to be accepted. Really appreciate you sharing that story, and kudos on the clean time or sobriety, I guess. Clean time's more of the NA
yeah.
term, slow pitch. If you're listening, I know you're giving me crap, but well, you know, would be curious, you know, health wise, like how are you doing today? How do you feel like in terms of, you know, getting into regular sort of physical fitness, but also, you know, the impact of not drinking for that long has got to feel good.
Yeah, it does. Physical fitness wise, F3 really, as everybody knows who sticks with it, right? You might think you're in some form of physical shape, but until you're actually out there grinding on a daily basis and doing something new each day, you don't really have, you probably don't have as good of a baseline as you expect. So, it was humbling. Like I said, when I was more or less replacing an addiction with F3, and I quickly became addicted to F3.
Yeah.
So I went, 6 days a week. I went Monday through Saturday for 6 weeks. And I remember my body finally kind of broke down. I remember it was a firewalker beat down at the pit towards the end of that. And like, I could barely do a set of pushups. And I was like, I should probably take a day off.
Take a day. Yeah.
So, but I mean, yeah, it was huge, right? Like, I didn't necessarily have any weight gain, but I realized how, I guess, for lack of a better term, weak I really was, right? So I felt a lot better. I was getting faster. I was getting immensely stronger. But my weight stayed the same. So I was just basically replacing fat with muscle and, just feeling really good. The biggest thing probably for me with, getting into shape physically is being able to sleep a little bit less, right? Like sleep's important, but I used to need at least 8 hours of sleep or I was a complete zombie the next day. And now the target's more like I need 6 hours and I can get up and I can get after it all day long. And
okay. Right. So yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest things. And then, it's kind of funny. It seems counterintuitive that working out would make you need to sleep less, but your body's just, you know, I think.
Well, and not drinking probably has to help with that. Cause I just know when I consume any form of alcohol, my rest, like you don't get into REM, right? Scientifically, a lot of people don't get into REM. So your quality of sleep is so poor. Yeah. That's why you run so ragged. So, I mean, there probably is some science to it. We're not science guys or anything like that, but just being able to get better quality sleep is probably contributing to that in some way.
Yeah.
You know, I am curious because I want to ask about the fellowship piece because you made a comment early on about, you know, you weren't necessarily surrounding yourself with like-minded people that were coming to work out at 5:30 in the morning. You know, as you were, you know, as you're entering into sobriety and entering into this group in F3, did you make a cognizant decision to kind of change your circle or lean more into the group, or how'd you go about that?
I think I definitely leaned into the group. Not necessarily, I don't know. I've always been kind of an introvert and stuck to myself a little bit. So honestly, I think with becoming sober, I probably pulled back into my own shell more than anything just to kind of reevaluate and figure out, you know, who is it? How do I operate in this new form? Right. But I do remember that once I started going to cafeteria and, you know, realizing that was there, that was huge. That was really awesome to be able to just talk with guys, you know, because prior to F3, pretty much the only fellowship I had involved hanging out and having beers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the conversations just at cafeteria are deeper than what I'd probably had for a long time, if not ever, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just guys just talking in passing almost. So,
mm-hmm. What about, were you doing AA or did you do a 12 step fellowship at all?
I didn't.
Okay. Yeah. No worries. Yeah.
It felt like an extra layer. I thought about it and my wife mentioned it too, but, it felt like an extra layer of pressure that I wasn't prepared to take on at the time. So,
yeah, there's a lot of similarities and even in Free to Lead, I think they kind of talk about, you know, structuring some elements of F3 based on, you know, AA. I would be curious too, you know, as you're thinking about the fellowship piece, one of the things I remember was just, and you kind of hinted at it, but just like you almost go through this identity shift, right? Because so much of who you were was connected back to alcohol. So then learning from other guys, and I feel like you, Q-Source is something that you participated in. Would be curious if you felt like Q-Source had any sort of impact on building those relationships deeper.
Yeah, it definitely did. I remember I probably jumped into Q-Source fairly early. I remember it was after it had gotten cold enough. So I started in October and we were at Hy-Vee after the pit on a Saturday. So it would have been cold enough that we weren't doing it there on site. But I want to say it was within a couple of months that once I realized that coffee happened every day afterwards. And then this Q-Source, you know, I didn't know anything about it, but I just wanted more, right? I wanted more. Mm-hmm. And that was to go back to the fellowship. I probably wanted more of the fellowship than I wanted the coaching that would come out of Q-Source, right? And the learnings that would come from that. So I did jump into that. And I think Q-Source has been, you know, a big part of kind of my development within F3 and kind of my feeling comfortable in considering myself a leader,
yeah.
Right? When you're kind of a closet, when you're hiding so much from basically everybody, right? It's hard to feel confident about yourself. And so that was one of the big shifts for me. And definitely Q-Source would help with that because I could relate to, you know, I could understand the messaging, although the way it's written, anybody who's been to a Q-Source with me, I'll call it out when it's like, you know, if you try to read this, this is what it says, but this is what I think it means, right?
Yeah.
Very much written by a lawyer, I guess, right?
Former military lawyer. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Yep. Yep. I love it. I think, it's just so cool, right? Because we offer all these different things, right, to every guy that comes out. And then depending on where you're at, they sort of hit you or meet you, you know, and serve different needs for each of us. I would be curious for you if you found a shield lock or if, you know, anything like that has been a resource for you throughout your time in F3.
Yeah. So I kind of have two unofficial. One is OGK. So we're just kind of like, almost like brothers anymore, right? Like neither of us have, I don't have any siblings, period. And he doesn't have any that live in town. So, kind of more or less, seem to fill that role for each other. Best friends, brothers, whatever. So we've just become closer and I think he credits me for re-EHing him. So once I got in and I was just going like crazy, he was like, shoot. Should probably go every once in a while as well. So, so OGK, definitely. We talk a lot. We try to coordinate posting. We do a lot of, we try to do stuff together outside of F3 when we can. Obviously life's really busy. He's got kids that are the same age as mine, or very close. So having an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, it's not a whole lot of free time that happens that you can just, but we try to get the families together every once in a while and do stuff. And then also unofficially, I've got sort of a shield lock with Nene and Oscar. So I EH'd both those guys, although Nene kind of EH'd himself because he, but anyways, we all worked at the same company. And so we had a work chat together for a long time, you know, talking about where we went, what the beatdown was like, where we were going to post next, you know, sharing ideas for beatdowns, running beatdown plans by each other and stuff. So, we still have a group chat on through text, even though we're not all necessarily working at the same company anymore. So, but we keep each other grounded, I think, more or less just kind of a support system to kind of talk and bounce ideas off of each other. So.
Yeah, that's great. You know, as I'm thinking here, right, you're coming into the group, you're able to form some relationships, form, you know, what seems to be like a brotherly or best friend bond with OGK. You know, but I am curious, like, what type of impact this has had on your immediate circle. So your wife and your kids, you know, what are they thinking about this? How have they viewed your progress through this journey here?
My wife, once I got over, well, it still goes in phases, but once I found a grips on how much time I spent on Slack and WhatsApp and Twitter, once I figured out how to balance that, my wife's all on board, right? She obviously sees that it's good for me. Everybody says it, right? If you post in the morning, your day is different, right? Especially those first interactions that you have with your family in the mornings as you're getting ready for school or getting ready to get the day started. So she definitely sees the positive in it, knows that if I'm not posting, my mental's not going to be quite as sharp as it would be otherwise. My kids are pretty young still. My 8-year-old does ask me about alcohol. And so he, you know, partly because of my openness to share it with him, but, you know, he'll ask me questions every once in a while about it. So I think he can see that I am different. You know, he was 6 when I started and now he's 8. So they do obviously see and absorb a lot at that age, but I don't know how much he knows exactly how much it's changed me and benefited me. Mm-hmm. I think it is there and he can see that. He knows that I like to get up and work out. And, you know, hopefully that's at least, you know, setting some good examples for him and my other 2 kids that, you know, physical fitness and abilities are important.
Heck yeah. It's so cool that you're open to with your kids about it. I think, you know, something it's still a fear of mine, right? Is some of this stuff can be hereditary. And so you start thinking, okay, you know, how do I prevent it? And maybe you can, maybe you can't. But I think at least talking to your kids about it, letting them know it's a real thing and to be careful. You know, I think it's super important. I'm curious, have you brought any of your kids out to a 2.0 beatdown at all? Have they actually seen F3 sort of in action?
Yeah, they've come out. They talk a big game. They want to come, but then they come and they they clam up and they just want me to carry them around, you know, especially my 2 younger ones. But all 3 of them have been. They do have names. My 8-year-old is Stick and Puck. He plays hockey, so Stick and Puck is the name that he kind of chose for himself. He actually will maybe come participate to some level. My other 2, I think, so my 5-year-old, I think his name is Tyrannosaurus, and my 4-year-old, my 4-year-old daughter is, well, it was funny, the last one that we went to, he chose his name as Tyrannosaurus, and then I think it was Black Tuesday's son was right behind him and was like, my name's T-Rex. So it's a popular thing with, you know, 3 to 5-year-old boys. And then my 4-year-old daughter, I think my 8-year-old offered this up and she rolled with it. I think she's a little Miss Unicorn. So,
a lot of unicorns and dinosaurs out there in the F3 2.0 land for sure.
So they've been, but they're a little young. I'd like to bring them back out when they get a little bit older and can understand, like, hey, we're here to work out at least a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Well, I love that, and I'm curious too, because at least to me, right, this is all somewhat of a spiritual journey, right? So as you're thinking about that third F, what's been kind of your backstory from a faith perspective? And then would love to hear, like, how has F3 maybe helped you grow in that area?
It's definitely helped me grow. I'd say it's of the three Fs, it's definitely the one that I'm probably the farthest from being comfortable in.
Hmm.
You know, growing up, I kind of mentioned it a little bit, but my parents were always divorced, and I kind of spent time, you know, I was never more than a couple of years living in the same house necessarily with the same, you know, parent figures. I do remember, going to church with my grandma, for at least a couple of years when I was younger, kind of off and on, and, you know, mostly, I don't remember, it was mostly the programs, like, for kids, right? Whether it was just more or less going and hanging out and playing in the mornings when I was young, to mm-hmm. being a part of a youth group for, you know, a brief period of time. I would definitely say that faith and religion are something that I maybe just not had a whole lot of exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that, you know, a lot of it would naturally kind of come from your parents or your family. And, I just didn't really have that. So it wasn't something that I kind of stuck with, or really had anything to stick to with. I've heard other guys say it. Honestly, I feel like F3 is probably kind of like my church community. It's, you know, a healthy environment where you can be open and you're there for growth, whether it be physically or emotionally. So I would say that's it. F3 has made me more open to a higher power kind of overseeing and kind of being in control of things. But I'll be honest, I'm not at a completely comfortable spot to say that I believe one specific thing or another, right? I do think that there's too many things that have happened I believe there is something governing from a higher level. So I think it's something that I'm still kind of growing into and looking to figure out. So.
Yeah, I love it. And I think that's what's so cool, right, is that we're not a religious group, so you don't have to have that figured out, right? I think that's such a beautiful thing, because it's a process, you know. And I think for me, similar childhood, right, parents were divorced and it wasn't really a part of our life growing up, and thankfully it was part of my wife's life, and that's kind of how I got introduced. But still didn't really have my own faith figured out. I would say some days I'm still working through what that looks like. So I just love that we get to be around guys like you that have, you know, that have the desire, but are still trying to think it through. I would be curious, and I don't know. I mean, I think we do a lot of stuff in F3, but we try to kind of like glide on this balance where we're not preaching and we're being open to all men, but are there things we could be doing differently to help you in that area? Or you think it's just the way it is, kind of letting each guy be on their own sort of path in that space? Is that the right way to do it?
I don't know that I'd prescribe anything. You know, there are guys that are obviously, you know, more in tune with their faith and their beliefs. It's not hard to spot, right? Whether it be even just in a COT or a prayer to close out, you know, it's pretty apparent the guys that are, you know, more in tune and more comfortable there. Mm-hmm. I think it's what I would suggest is just that everybody continues to be open. Yeah. And it's honestly more for people who are maybe coming from where I'm at. I don't necessarily think that anybody who, you know, is super in tune needs to go out and try to yeah. to recruit guys to like come with them to a church service or anything like that, or even specifically have a conversation. But just those of us who maybe are still looking or are somewhere, but maybe want to explore further, you know, we need to be open, and we need to know that there's a lot of guys in this group that are very, very comfortable and are, would be willing to, you know, share and have whatever open conversations there are. Right. Mm-hmm. So more of an encouragement that, and I've had some of these with groups, you know, small groups. I remember there's been a few specific Q sources where I've kind of opened up about it and really kind of talked with some guys about some things.
That's
just
so cool.
Yeah. I would encourage everybody to just continue to be open with each other.
Yeah. I love that. 'Cause what you're describing, in my opinion, you know, is what God wanted the church to be like, but too often, you know, we focus so much on man-made sort of, you know, rules and legalism that we don't have that community. So I love that you've been able to just at least talk about it openly and not have to make a decision or even, you know, like nobody's trying to convert you. It's just a conversation and people coming next to each other. So I love that.
Hey, are you the type of guy that likes to get up early in the winter to battle your jester? Do you love listening to people drone on and on and on about COVID in the gloom? Would you trust your vision to a guy nicknamed Cataracts? Well, if the answer to any of these questions is yes, fellas, you have bigger problems than you think. Dr. Cataracts, aka Dr. Wolf, can't solve all of your problems, but he can certainly help you solve the problems related to your eye health and vision. You will find many F3 principles throughout his practice. Check him out today at Exclusively Eye Care.
I am curious too a little bit, as you think about the other kind of side of Third F, right? We kind of, at least the way I view it, right? It's like we've got the kind of spiritual components of faith, and then we've got the community service piece. What's been your experience or exposure to that side of things in F3?
It's definitely boosted my desire to help out, right? Understanding that I'm in a fortunate place and I can do things to help, right? Whether it be monetarily or with time, mm-hmm. right? One of the larger things that I've had an opportunity to take part with here in F3 is part of the food drive last year. So I'm lucky enough to work for a company that offers matches, and so we were able to get a match up to a certain dollar amount. And so we were able to double our contribution from our Sarpy sector last year based on being able to submit that. So that was cool to kind of be able to rally everybody and like, hey, if you send me a donation, it's going to get matched, right? Just mm-hmm. send it to me and, you know, we'll see how much we can raise. You know, I can get, I think it's up to $2,500 a year match through my company. And I think that we were coming into that final day and I think we got right to that amount. So we were able to turn $2,500 in monetary donations up to $5,000. So,
that's so
yeah,
cool.
That was pretty cool. And then, obviously there's a lot of stuff time wise. It's hard with my kids right now, with activities and just, you know, their needs. They're not quite old enough to come help with most things. I think that's something that I'd like to dive into more as opportunities present themselves as my kids get older and maybe be able to get them involved more. But right now it's kind of hard to break away on a Saturday for a whole day.
Yeah.
Even though I'd really love to, because, you know, selfishly, it makes you feel good to kind of do these things. And also you can see the benefit that it provides. So
I feel like that's a common response, especially between Plague and I. We've had conversations about this too, where, you know, there is a desire to do more, but there is only so little time in a day to do it. And, you know, whether that's a selfish justification or not, I think the one beautiful thing that we have here is that there's opportunity to do it, whether that's you taking a step forward and saying, hey, this is something I'm really passionate about and I would like to do this, or there's enough guys within this group that are saying, hey, I've got this passion, I'm doing it, contribute as much or as little as you'd like. And just having that option there, I think, is just the beautiful part. Mm-hmm. Would be curious about your experience as a leader here. You know, we like to, the goal here is to reinvigorate or invigorate male community leadership. We do that by allowing people to have VQs and then be site Qs, take on leadership roles. Just, you know, curious your takeaways from being able to serve in some type of leadership role. And did any of it translate over to real life outside the confines of F3?
It 100% did for me. I think there's just so many strong male figures. I mean, whether somebody's outspoken or not, you know, if you really talk to anybody who's posting regularly at F3, they're high impact men, and, you know, really awesome to be able to just hear and learn from so many people. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I tried to focus on as a site Q, was just talking to guys and asking them questions and then listening to them. And then, you know, providing advice if needed, right. And appropriate, but, you know, just having the opportunity to listen to so many people talk about their experiences with their kids and their families, and even hear about the things that they're going through that are challenging, right? And then you can see, like, wow, I would have never expected to hear that you're going through such a hard time right now, because I see you in the gloom 3 or 4 days a week and you've just got a positive attitude, or you know, I can see that you're being supportive, but you're actually going through a lot right now. So it really has helped me. You know, I'm far from perfect. Like, I'd love to be a perfect husband and a perfect father. Way far from it. Need daily reminders, but seeing the guys in the gloom and learning how they're leading has really helped me kind of take, you know, the positive aspects of what I see out of everybody else and try to implement it in some sort of way with my kids and my relationships.
Heck yeah. How long were you sober before you became a site Q? Not quite a year, or just about a year?
Not quite a year. It was about, let's see, so it would have been September and then July. So about 10 months.
Yeah. I love it. Part of why I ask, a similar journey, you know, as I got to be a site Q maybe a couple months after I was clean. And I just remember I needed that. I needed somebody to tell me I could still lead, that I still could add value. I don't know, curious, what was your experience as you were kind of coming through sobriety and then getting a chance to lead?
Yeah. So when Chernobyl first approached me about it, I think in like March, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, no way. Like, I'm not ready for this. Like, you know, physically, I feel like I can't keep up with most of the people here still. You know, and I was like, and honestly, I don't feel like I'm, you know, at the level in terms of, you know, quality of person, you know. Like, I'm still struggling in my relationships to make them what I want them to be. But it was humbling, and I'm grateful for the opportunity and what Chernobyl saw in me for that. And then from there, it was kind of like, you know, you start to think about it and you're like, yeah, maybe, you know what? I think I can do this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if Chernobyl thinks this, like, looked up to him. I still do. If he sees that in me, you know, maybe some other guys do. And maybe if I just feel some confidence in myself, you know, I could do this thing. Right. Yep. And so, I think just trying, as the site Q at the pit, you know, I just tried to stay humble and keep people engaged, right? And then QSource, while I maybe subtly tried to let it slide, Firewalker was like, no, you need to get QSource going again. So, you know, it doesn't start or stop conveniently, like as the flag passes or anything. But I remember it finished, and then a couple weeks went by, and he's like, what are you doing with QSource? And it's like, you know, I don't know. I was thinking about maybe going through free delete. And he's like, no, you should do QSource again. And so we picked it back up, and that was actually, I'm really glad that he kind of forced my hand there, because that was really valuable experience to kind of be in charge of that over the course of time, and be able to not only have the workouts with the guys consistently every Saturday, but then also be able to meet, you know, either on site there or head over to Hy-Vee and have time to, you know, dig deeper into the leadership discussion. So overall, it was a great experience being a site Q. Not going to lie, I feel like I kind of limped in towards the end, right? I had a really strong track record. I don't think I missed a day for like 9 months, and then a bunch of stuff came up towards the end, and I really feel like I just limped in, but it was good. I think I lost you guys.
Oh, I lost you there at the
end. Yeah, I did too. I'm sorry.
You're good. You were saying it was a great experience being a site Q. You know, I would be curious, and I think you had some solid advice for guys. I love that idea of just stay humble, keep guys engaged, right? And then I think, you know, continuing to work through the things that previous site Qs had going, right? Like QSource and that sort of thing. I would be curious, as you're thinking about the site and the pit, you know, definitely holds a special place in my heart, but talk to us about succession planning. What did that look like for you as you were getting ready to hand off the flag?
I'm losing you here. It's not coming through.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
It's very choppy. Modulated.
It's probably because Blake lives in the boonies.
No, I got fiber out here, buddy. Can you hear us now? His somebody turn on a Netflix or something at your place, Buster?
It's possible. I don't know. Now I'm hearing you a little bit better.
Talk to us about succession planning at the pit. How'd you identify and kind of pass off the flag there?
Yeah, that's actually kind of funny. So I ended up passing the flag to OGK. And I started thinking about it fairly early on, because I knew that there'd be a lot of flag passes coming up in the summertime. And I actually had to drop something off over to him at his house, and mentioned it to him, and I was like, I'm, you know, already starting to think about the, you know, who I'm going to pass the flag to at the pit. And so I kind of talked to him a little bit, and then he just kind of deadpan looks me in the face, and he's like, you know, sometimes there's guys who've been around longer who maybe haven't had the chance to lead. And I kind of looked at him puzzled for a second, and I was like, oh, he's talking about himself. Like, and I was like, oh wait, I was like, would you want to lead the pit? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And so I went over to him to talk to basically get advice from him on what he thought, and come to find out that he was actually interested. And then the more I thought about it, the more it just made sense. Yeah. He's just such a great guy, and so supportive, so loving to everyone that he encounters. I'm really pleased that he's able to take over and lead. He travels a lot for work, so While Saturday sites are tough for most people, Saturday sites probably the only site that would work for him because he does travel so much during the week. So happy to be able to pass it on to him and kind of see where the pit goes from there. So, but it was kind of funny that I was going to him for advice because I've always looked up to him.
Yeah.
Come to find out that it was something that he was actually interested in, and it makes sense. So,
Nothing like the guy at UEH gets the flag before you and then hands it back to you, right? I love that. What, where, you know, you think about current state, you know, and I do have to just, I guess, before we get where you need prayers, man, I just got to thank you for your story. Thank you for your leadership. You know, I think there's so much power in you being able to share your story the way that you do. And so many other guys benefit from that. So I just would encourage you to keep sharing that story, that victory over addiction. And, you know, it hits me, you know, hits close to home for me, but there's so many other guys out there that I think just benefit from hearing your story. So just thank you for that. Really appreciate you and definitely love you as a man, as a leader. I do want to know, you know, current state, where do you need prayers and encouragement if we see out there, or how can we kind of help support you?
Yeah. Thanks for that, Plague. I appreciate that. I need help with patience right now. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the, before we started recording, about kind of a transition in life right now. My wife and I opened up a business, and so she's working later hours. You know, she's much happier in the role that she's at, which is awesome, but it's also shifting some of the stuff that I maybe relied on her to do from a parenting perspective over to me. So I need to adjust and make sure that as I'm doing that, that I'm being fair and patient with my kids, right? Because I mentioned it earlier this week after a beatdown, but it's easy to be hard on our kids and expect them to do what we expect them to do. But, you know, if you really think back to what it was like being a kid, it was pretty tough. And so I gotta remember to give my kids grace and know that they're, you know, while their life is easy in our eyes, it's not necessarily easy for them. So I need patience there.
Heck yeah. Same. I'll be thinking about you on that. I think a lot of us could use that. Well, this has been great. Just again, appreciate your story and the time today. Let's, we'll wrap up with a little name-a-rama here. I'll start, Brandon Fliardi, 38, The Plague.
The Plague.
John Lewer, 33, Pony Express.
Pony. Nay.
Express. Kevin Klein, 38, Busser.
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 And do we have a call sign for you or no? Not nothing yet.
Yeah,
Swiper hasn't come up.
It started as keep the change. Kind of, you know, like a bus boy picking up the change, and now it's more turned into keep the change, you filthy animal, from whatever movies inside Home Alone.
Yeah. Home Alone, yeah. Yeah.
Usually awesome. Keep the change, you filthy animal. So
I love it. Well, I appreciate you, brother. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, thanks, you two guys. Thanks.